Hey guys, this is Nathan Chen, U.S. champion.
Hi everyone, this is Jason Brown.
Hi, I'm Patrick Chan.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Osmond.
Hi, this is Megan Duhamel.
And I'm Eric Radford.
Hey, this is Karen Chen.
Hey, this is Ashley Wagner.
Hi, this is Kurt Browning, and well, guess what? You're listening to Ice Talk.
Welcome back to Ice Talk, everyone. I'm Jackie Wong of rockerskating.com. If you missed last week's episode, I highly encourage you to listen to it. I had a chat with Yevgenia Medvedeva when I was in Moscow for Rostelecom Cup. In the meantime, you are listening to episode 47, and as we reach the mid-century mark on episodes, we are also about to reach the middle of this season's Grand Prix series. After Skate Canada last weekend, we have Cup of China in Beijing coming up this week. And I will have four-time world champion and CBC commentator Kurt Browning on the show to go through what to expect in Beijing this weekend. And after that, it's the Kinnearums. Alexa and Chris will be joining me as they prepare for NHK Trophy next weekend in Japan.
Joining me back on Ice Talk is Canadian skating legend Kurt Browning. He is also now a regular commentator for Canadian figure skating viewers. Kurt, thanks for being back on the podcast.
Regular as in boring or regular as in consistent?
Regular as in...
Careful now.
Not boring.
Nice chatting with you, Jackie. As always.
So we are just off of Skate Canada International, and it was a somewhat crazy weekend of skating. What were your big takeaways coming out of the competition?
Pleased to see, not because she's a friend and a Canadian, but I was pleased to see Caitlin Osmond win. It's always fun for Canadians to win at home and fun for Canadian fans. I'm just glad to see that this skater has momentum, and I hope that she builds confidence with it, because I think she is what we're looking for in moving forward as far as representing our sport. And I think that her vivaciousness on the ice, her I want to be in front of you attitude, her performance, and then her physicality, her jumps are seamless and smooth and beautiful. And she attacks them. She doesn't slow down going into them. And there really isn't a lot of fidgeting and adjusting. It's just kind of hearkening back to a pure age of skating and jumping. So I was happy to see that happen. And not so happy to see Patrick take a hard, long program. And it's going to happen. And especially with the risk factor in the men's event, occasionally you'll see someone implode. But, you never want to see one of the best skaters that's ever skated have a rough day like that. And that was kind of tough.
Yeah, for Caitlin, going back to her last year's short program, I thought that was a really good choice for her and her team. And I think it gives her a sense of comfort that I don't think I saw when she had first debuted the short. But
the theme this year is going back to old stuff.
My goodness, yes. I mean, it's totally. Like Adam Rippon had said a couple of episodes ago, the greatest hits of figure skating. So
see the nuance changes.
With Patrick Chan, two new programs, no repeats there. That free skate, before Skate Canada, he had talked about how he wanted to, take out the quad sal because he wanted to have jumps that he was kind of more familiar with, and that he didn't feel like he had to kind of push his way toward enjoying his program. And yet, you saw with the mistakes in his free skate that you can't take this difficulty for granted. And things happen, like you said.
It's interesting that he would do that, because in the very few limited times he's tried the quad sal, he's been quite successful at it. So
I know.
To hear him say that, figure skating, I mean, I suppose if you're neck deep in any sport, it's a feeling sport. But I really think, because of the branding that we choose individually and or as a team, the costumes, the music, the way you move, the way you dance, the way you do your hair, even your makeup, like it's such an image projection. You're trying to sway an audience to feel as well as to be impressed with your physicality. And how you feel about yourself when you're doing those things, it changes your triple axel. It changes the way you release your energy up into the jumps. It changes the way you feel when you're unfolding that triple or that quad. And do you want to do that triple toe? Are you going to do a safe one? Are you going to do one with your arm over your head? And how you feel about yourself is really, really, really important. And I think that the choices we make stepping onto the ice matter, but also just how we feel, like when we look in the mirror. And so this is the big year. This is the year where, you know, you're kind of trying to justify a lot of choices you've made in your life as an athlete or somebody who's didn't go to school or somebody who maybe could have retired and just went pro but didn't. So no pressure, kids, and try to enjoy your skating. But it's hard. It's a hard year, you know, and pretending that it's the same and as any other year, you just shouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about comfort, I mean, you know, a lot of skating fans are always like, oh, why are we seeing the same programs over and over again? And it's exactly that point that you just made of being comfortable and feeling like you can actually deliver the programs that you want to deliver. And if it's something that you are comfortable with and you feel like you can deliver it, then that's the best choice you can make for yourself.
Yeah, the risk. A friend and I were talking the other day and we said, why do you see a skater take chances or different directions in an exhibition program? And then when it comes time, and they look fantastic. Mm-hmm. Then when it comes time to compete, they go right back to that same entrance for the triple flip or the same style of movement, same cadence as they have for 4 or 5 years. And it's because that's the only place they see themselves doing the triple-triple or the quad-triple or the five quads. And that's where they have to go, you know?
So mental, all kinds of mental. But let's set our sights on Cup of China, our third Grand Prix of the season. Wanted to start with pairs with you. The biggest name there is going to be Sui and Han, the reigning world champions. We saw Duhamel and Radford and Savchenko and Miso last week in Canada, and then we saw Tarasova and Morozov in Russia 2 weeks ago, and with Sui and Han debuting on the Grand Prix this week, they will basically have filled out all of the favorites for the Olympic podium this season. Where do you see Sui and Han at Cup of China this week, and how do you think they're going to fare this season?
I'm going to guess, because I don't have, sometimes I have a secret in through, you know, somebody who went over there or a choreographer that worked with them. And I don't, but I'm a huge fan. I'm truly a huge fan from their cowboy number, from when they were so small that you had to wear, you know, binoculars on your face to see them at center ice. They were tiny little sprites. I've been fascinated with them. And then her evolution, Wenjin just evolved into an actress and owned the stage, and she has a wonderful you know, stem in her partner, and she's the flower, and gosh, and she's so powerful. And I don't know how they're going to, sometimes a program is so great or you're such a fan of it that you go, where can they go from that? Mm-hmm. It may be lateral but up. So I think that their biggest competition is themselves. I really do. That they have to look better, or at least having gone in the same direction as well or better, or in a direction that makes them look creatively as interesting as last year. And I think that's the challenge for them. I really think they're a fantastic team. I love their elements, but mostly I feel like I'm watching a dance piece. And the dance world has been a big part of my life personally and an inspiration for me artistically. And when I watch them, I'm not watching pairs. I'm watching a dance piece, and that's why they're my favorite.
With them, I do feel like last year it was such an emotional season for them.
Oh, yeah.
Coming back.
Was it crazy that they had to come back from?
Yeah, yeah. Coming back from that, from the surgeries, and, you know, they... Even at Worlds, when you saw them at the press conference, it was one of those things where you looked at them and they were just so happy to be skating, so happy to be skating with each other, and you know, you yep. saw them grow very much with each other. So it will be intriguing to see them.
I had a nice talk with Kong on the bus in Boston at the Worlds, and he said, "We might never meet again." And he gave me a nice hug. He's like, "I'm not sure that we'll be back." Like, so, you know, thanks for your friendship and. I love talking to you, and bye. He goes, I don't know. Like, this could be it. So I can understand why they were so happy.
Right, exactly. Yuan Zhang and Marc-Anne Hotaric and Delamonte Kangorese will be there. as well as Kanan LeDuc, the U.S. bronze medalist, who will be making their Grand Prix debut. But I wanted to talk to you more about Kirsten Moore-Towers and Michael Marinaro. They will be in Beijing this week. And if we look at the bigger picture in Canada, they are really in a three-team fight for two Olympic spots for Canada. And that's assuming that Duhamel and Radford get the third spot. We have Seguin and Bilodeau at Rus Telecom Cup a couple of weeks ago, and then we had Ilyushchenkina and Moskovich on the Grand Prix last week. What do you think is the importance of this competition for Kirsten and Michael this week?
I guess what's important sometimes is literally just winning and making sure that when you step on the ice at the national championships that you have given the judges every single reason to believe you're going to do it that day. And as soon as you come even close, they feel good about giving you the better mark. That you have shown them that your track record through the season is a strong one, and that you made the Grand Prix final. So, I mean, you really have to take advantage of every situation. It's, you know, it's going to be a little tough for them to place at this one. They might, but I think that that's what they have to do. They have to just literally beat somebody, and I mean, be the best, second best probably Canadian team, and try to make the Grand Prix final, like, or at least medal, and the other teams don't. I would think that you want to come into the national championships looking like you expect to be going to Worlds.
Right, and what's interesting about Moore-Towers and Marinaro here is that they're coming in knowing that their kind of main rivals in Canada, outside of Duhamel and Radford, have not looked incredibly good so far this season. And so I think they're, if I were them, I would be sensing some sort of opening there, especially since they have been kind of more or less, if you'd say, the fourth team over the last few seasons in Canada. Like, you have to believe that if they've been following the skating over the last couple of weeks, that they know that there's some sort of door opening for them possibly this season.
If not this season, then never. You know, it's, you know, you do look at Kirsten's age, and she seems incredibly healthy right now. But if not this year, then when?
Yeah.
So they really have to have a good season, and starting this weekend.
Starting this weekend. Well, on the women's side, Zagitova, Daleman, Higuchi, Honda, Mihara, Radionova, Tuktamusheva, all of them competing at Cup of China. How many did I just name? That was seven skaters. And
yeah, the ladies' event is stacked.
Oh my God.
And Russia sent a squadron, and so did Japan.
Yep.
You know, we've got Wakaba Higuchi, I hope I'm saying her last name correctly, is just rising in the ranks. It's kind of like a rock group with that one hit wonder, and then they followed up with another good song. She's really interesting. Honda Junior, a medalist last year at Junior Worlds, right?
Yeah, silver.
She's pretty good too. I mean, they're all. What's interesting about the ladies' event is they all seem compressed, like a zip file, and you don't quite know what you're going to get until you click it, and then it opens up, and because everybody. You know, it's, I think of all the events, it's really a mishmash of who could be the one that pops through that day, gets through the surface of the water first, with, you know, the potential of some triple triples here, some triple triples there. Who's going to under rotate? Are the judges going to jump on you today? If they do, and you under rotated a couple jumps, and all of a sudden you didn't get that bonus, and it's really kind of, as far as being a commentator, it's like, okay, here comes the ladies' event. Time to focus.
We saw that at Skate Canada this past weekend. It was just, the technical panel was just so strict, probably the strictest I've ever seen at a competition, on jumps where, really to the naked eye, in real time, you did not see any sort of under rotation, and it was still called under. So you're right, like the... You look at the women's field in every competition now, and you wonder how clean are those jumps actually going to be come competition time.
And for me, it's a real distraction from the joy of skating and the elegance of it. Like, because I'm with ice dance, I can literally kind of allow myself, because I'm not from that world. I'm a single skater, and so I allow myself to get caught up in the grandeur of it and the long legs and the the intimacy that happens between the couples and the speed and the flow and blah, blah, blah. And go, who's better? And I go, I don't know, but they all look great. And but you can't do that with the ladies because you're scrutinizing every landing, even the takeoffs. Was it a toe axle, which is definitely a geeky skating term, but it's basically not transferring your weight through on a takeoff of a toe jump and staying in one spot and it's a geek term, but it's not a pretty jump. You know, it's not what jumping should be, which is flow and transition up and across and over the ice and landing completely backwards with a running edge. And it's lost. It's getting lost in the ladies' event. And, you know, I'm missing Yuna Kim more and more, and those beautiful flow landings that she had. And I don't mind that they're clamping down on it. And maybe at the beginning of the Olympic year, it's not too late to say, look, we're setting a standard. I mean, it should have been a couple years ago. But if that's what's happening, I applaud it.
Well, Zagitova has certainly been making her way pretty much straight to the top of women's skating this season. She had a stunning debut at Lombardia Trophy and then again skated really well at Japan Open, but this will be her debut on the Senior Grand Prix. I am really excited to see what she brings here to Cup of China, especially among this group of competitors. So what are your thoughts on her outlook this season?
You know, I'm still kind of getting to know her skating. I know that she knows how to win. She's junior world champion. And, you know, and Russia is sending her out. So she's a force. She's new. And sometimes, you know, when you're brand new, you don't have a lot of crap in your head. And earlier chatting with you about 10 minutes ago, we were talking about how strong the mental strength is when it comes to figure skating and how easily it is to have a whole season just kind of get away from you in the 5-minute warm-up or just as your music's starting. If she's fresh and clean in her mind and all she knows how to do is just do that program clean, that could be to her advantage in an Olympic season.
Like you, I think I am very intrigued by the matchup between the three of the top four Japanese women here. I am just, I'm surprised that all three of them are competing here, to be perfectly honest, but with two spots for Japan for the ladies at the Olympics, I think there is some scheming that the Japanese Federation is doing to make sure that they are looking at the right people and making sure that they're having the competition that they want them to have. So we've seen Higuchi and Mihar and Honda in competition this season. Higuchi was at Rostelecom, Honda was at Skate Canada last week, and Mihara, for me, perhaps having the best season so far of the three, will be skating in her first Grand Prix of the season. What do you think of these three skaters?
I'm really fascinated by the ownership of the ice, and I get fixated on that, and then I find that you know, the jumps kind of take care of themselves. As we spoke about, sure, you can win and lose a competition with the jumps, but these three are very, very good. And so I honestly don't think that this battle is going to get won technically. I think this battle is going to be won by who wants it and who claims it. Who wore the dress best? You know, that when everything else is the same, well, I'll go with the one with confidence and the one with the look and the feel that I like. And right now I just, the maturity level with the new programs of Wakaba have me very interested in some, but you know, Mihara has really good. Oh, gee, I don't know. But it's those. I think it's between those two. But I'm leaning towards Wakaba right now.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, as we're recording this early in the week of Cup of China, and I know there's been a report that Honda is actually dealing with a left hip injury after or during Skate Canada. And so she's still listed on the entries as of right now, so we'll see if that changes during the week.
You're always so on top of it, man.
I try. You know, sleep is not a thing that happens very often. Let's talk about Gabby Dailman.
I just saw her the other day at the rink, and she looks really good physically and comfortable, cocky as ever. And, you know, she just seems happy, like really happy. And there's happy when you're just on show a little bit. It happens at, when you're meeting people and you kind of perk yourself up, right? And then there's just sort of this inner confidence that's kind of bubbling through. And I think it's the second one. I think she seems really, really great. And I saw her programs, running them in chunks, but not all the way through. And, she's a rocket, and sometimes rockets go left and crash, and sometimes they go to the moon. So, she's definitely a rocket. So she's just fun. She's fun to have in the equation always.
We saw Dailman earlier in the season, debut her programs. And I think she brings a different side to Carmen than some of the other skaters do. She brings a different side to Gladiator than we've seen. She's using a very different piece than we're used
I think
to.
She's the Carmen before she's quite mature. It's like, she's the prequel to Carmen.
A prequel to Carmen. Hopefully there won't be a sequel to Carmen. There's just too much Carmen going on.
Carmania.
Moulin Rougia and Carmania.
Yep.
Well, so moving on to dance, all eyes will be on two-time world champions Papadakis and Cicerone, on the heels of their rivals and training mates Virtue and Moyer, just delivering two fantastic programs at Skate Canada. And then Americans Chalk and Bates will be making their season debut, and Bobrova and Soloviev will also be there. And you'd have to imagine that those three are going to be the podium in one shape or other at Cup of China. So what are you expecting to see with these dance teams?
I guess France, United States, Russia. And I felt like Chalk and Bates have some unfinished business, because at Worlds last year, they just had some bad luck. And This time I do have a little in on how the training's going. And again, they seem really happy and content and forward and just coming in like a machine and doing their stuff and leaving happy and skating strong. And that's a team for me that I... at the beginning, I didn't really take notice of or believe in too much, to be honest. And I don't think I thought that their star was going to rise. I'm not sure why I didn't think that, but they've just kind of consistently pushed through with their product and fine-tuning their belief in what they should skate like. And they don't really fit it into the mold of what everyone else was doing. They've just kind of created a little bubble for themselves, and then that bubble, like they do in water, it rose. So I like them. I really enjoy them. And I like, again, it's their comfort level with themselves that I like so much. And Berbovi and Soloviev, I love, boy, they're classic Russian dancers. They're classic. But there isn't this comfort on the ice that I used to see in them. And sometimes something happens from a skater, single, pair, or dance that leaves you a little unsettled when you're watching them. And for me, a great performance is when you're only thinking about the performance. You're not wondering about a haircut. You're not wondering about a music choice. You're not wondering about them feeling uncomfortable on the ice. The best is when you're just watching and all you're thinking about is enjoying their skating. And I'm not quite getting that from them this year, but I'm sure getting it from the French. And so from my little screen, where you watch skating, you click on something and there's a link and then they pop up. So you're not getting the real thing because you're not. But this team knows where their strengths lie. And they rarely deviate from those strengths. Carol Lane pointed out to me something very interesting in their long, when they have to change pace of the music to something that isn't quite traditional for them, and they do two spins, and then when they start skating again, they get right back to their traditional. I don't know if that's super smart or if it was a coincidence or what, but it definitely just shows their strengths. He is so freaking good, and she is, she's like Jane Torval and Christopher Dean. She's like Jane. She just is there where she's supposed to be all the time, and I really think that they're responding well to the challengers that have come onto the scene. They could have just won, and then won and been Olympic champions, and that might have been what happens. But nope, the Tessa and Scott factor came back into play. But I think they're responding really well to it. And I don't know when they go head-to-head, but if everyone skates well, I got to say it's going to be a lot closer than people think.
I actually really enjoyed the spins as transitions from slow tempo to the faster tempo. So I thought that free dance is choreographed incredibly well, and it suits them perfectly.
Had it not been pointed out to me by dance guru Carol Lane, who's on my CBC team and commentates with me, if she hadn't pointed it out, I'm not sure I would have noticed it. But when I did, I went, you know, then I started going, what's going on there? And was that on purpose? But it didn't bother me either. I agree with you.
Well, finally, on to the men. 2 weeks ago, it was Nathan Chen versus Yuzuru Hanyu. Last week, it was Patrick Chan versus Shoma Uno. This week, we have the rest of the big, or what I call the big six, and it's Javier Fernandez versus Boyang Jin. How do you expect this men's field to play out this week?
The big six, I like that. Well, I just saw Javi the same day I got to see Gabby Dalman skate, and except for not having his work visa to go to China organized, which
so
is
Javi.
So typically Fernandez.
So Javi.
So Javi. I actually texted Brian Orso this morning knowing that I was going to chat with you. He said that he did get his work visa, got on the plane, and off he goes. Because it was looking like Javi was going to show up a couple days late or not be able to compete because of complications with the work visa. But he made it. But that's Javi. I mean, Javi's so relaxed. But year after year, he is getting better at being organized earlier in the season. And it's paid off with opportunities to become a world champion that he could capitalize on. And last year, you know, just a couple of points off of third. So he didn't medal last year, I believe, at the championships. But he looked great. And he did a run through the other day with a nice quad sal triple toe later on in the program. But he also did way too many jumps in the long program. So we were all skating around laughing, going, that is so heavy. But he came back and he goes, no, I was just practicing. I knew that I did that. And we all looked at him, really? Did you really know? He goes, yeah. So, you know, I threw in the extra this and the extra that. It's like, maybe you shouldn't practice that, young man. But he's looking great.
Maybe he's trying to be like Yevgenia Medvedeva, where she does triple toe off of every jump in practice.
Just because she's bored?
Just because she can.
I say that's why children run everywhere. They can. Boyang Jin, Boing Boing, I call him. I really think that he's so freaking likable that when it comes to, you call him the top six or the big six?
Big six.
Yeah, when it comes to the big six, he's like the, not comedic, but he's almost like that lovable character that you know might die off early in the show. You know, but they make you like him, and you know, and you think, oh my God, he's going to do something cool, and he's going to be the hero, and he does, but then he dies, and oh, jeez. So I worry about Boyang because I think that he has better footwork than we give him credit for, and I think that he's so super fast across the ice, and he's omnipresent when he competes. He's there for the judges, he's there for the audience, and he's such a likable skater. We have one sort of similar, Keegan Messing in Canada. And Keegan is really fun to watch because you don't know what's going to happen, but he is there for you. And that's what I like about Boyang. So for me, I think choice of music and all those things, he does need to kind of make choices that I think are a little more understandable. His choreography is so random. I hope, especially in his exhibition numbers, I hope that they made good choices for him artistically. And of course, the boy can jump, right? That quad lutz, he needs a passport from where he takes off to where he lands just to check back into customs. It's so big.
His two programs this season are a good step forward from what we've seen last year. I mean, I will not be the first to tell you that I loved his Spider-Man program. But it was not the kind of, I guess, artistic skating that you would expect from a two-time world bronze medalist. And I think this year he's actually got two programs that are showing off his kind of build and artistry that we're seeing this season.
It's good because Nathan Chen has stepped it up. Laurie Nickel has been a great asset to him. And you saw, like Boyang, you saw that he had good feet. And you saw that he had musicality, but you did see a whole lot of audience awareness. And this year, I think Nathan has made himself a very threatening presence in that Big Six, as you call them, with his music choices and his maturity growing. So I hope the same thing for Boyang, because I like my boy Boyang. Boyang Boyang's fun.
Completely agreed. And back to your note about Javi, he has somehow won basically the first two competitions of his season, and not skating perfectly there, but really kind of relying on himself being steady and relying on other skaters to make mistakes. Yuzuru Han, you made mistakes at Autumn Classic, and then Shoma Uno and Nathan Chen both made mistakes at Japan Open. And so, you know, does slow and steady win the race this year?
You know, we've got this era of the quad, reborn quad again, with three new quads in the last like 13 or 14 months added to competition. And we can't get rid of Jason Brown. Like we just can't. He doesn't do quads and he's still on podiums. Why? Because slow and steady sometimes does win the race. He's a beautiful skater, wonderful edge work. And I'm, you know, part of me is confused, but part of me is so happy that a great skater can go out there and do it without. Javi has the potential easily to do three quads in the long. Anything after that is pushing it for him. I'd like to see him do four quads and only one triple axel instead of two. So that would be, because I think his axel's like, yeah, it's kind of scary.
I am as surprised about Javi not putting a second quad toe in versus a second triple axel as I am surprised that Patrick Chan took out his quad Sao Cao and put in a second, or kept his second triple axel in his free skate. So yeah, I think you and I are on the same page on that.
Is there any Russian guys that you really like? Like, who's your favorite go? It's like, I'm turning this interview around, folks. Who's your go-to Russian guy?
Who's my go-to Russian guy? I gotta say, it's
name four of them. They're changing so fast, and then coming back, and then they're that guy's gone. No, he's back. He's 37. I don't care. He's back.
Well, speaking of 37, Voronov just won Minsk over the weekend. So yeah, there's another Russian who you thought had left the building and came back. No, but my favorite is Dmitry Aliev, and he was at Rostelecom Cup. I think he was also dealing with an injury, but you know, I think all around he's got the most well-rounded skating in terms of jumps, in terms of interpretation of the music, in terms of just basic foundational skating. I think he's really the real deal there. And then secondly, and kind of one here is Mikhail Kolyada, who is at Cup of China. I think he's got incredibly good skating. I don't particularly think his Elvis program this year is quite where it should be yet in terms of interpretation, in terms of the Elvis-ness of the whole thing. But you know, he's got a whole season to go to Graceland and channel Elvis as much as he can, right? I think he is right now most interested in making sure that somehow he gets a consistent quad Lutz and consistent quad Sao so he can be part of the Olympic podium conversation.
Which it seems you absolutely have to have. That's
yeah.
And kudos to Hanyu. I'll just put it out there since we're chatting, to be an Olympic champion, to be a world champion, and then come back and add two quads to your repertoire. I mean, that's sick.
And probably knowing that he does not even need, at least he does not need the quad Lutz to win the Olympics. He probably could go without the quad loop and still win the Olympics, but I don't know. He's pushing the envelope. He's pushing it because he knows that he not only wants to be two-time Olympic champion, but he wants to be two-time Olympic champion and the skater who could do all the jumps as well. So
he's winning the Grand Prix and then not winning the Worlds. And he didn't skate well at the last Olympics. So, you know, he's a wunderkind. I call him a wunderkind. But the more I watch him, the more I'm thinking, I wonder if it's just not going to happen this time. But when he's on, sheesh, those landings.
Oh, yeah.
They don't look like anyone else. Those landings are so sold. like a great joke.
Well, before we end, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about the men's event.
Sure.
A few names you got to consider when you're looking at the potential third spot on the podium. Han Yan, Max Aaron, Vincent Zhou, and Mikhail Koyada. So who in that group are you most interested in watching this
week? I was a huge Han Yan fan. Obviously, he's not doing it competitively. He just doesn't quite have the fortitude mentally, I guess. But back a few years ago, what an exciting skater. Incredible speed with the triple axel going down the side and doing that.
That's like halfway across the rink.
And then jumping, 18 feet across the ice with that triple toe and landing on the judges. Exciting, exciting skater. I've worked with him. He's better than anybody thinks he is, including himself. I would love a resurgence from Han just because, you know, like he's a great kid and I kind of miss him floating around the podium at events. Max Aaron, another fast skater. I think he's kind of like the evil Knievel. You know, it's like, yeah, just put an extra rocket on it and see what happens, but not sure where he's going to land. And so third spot. What about Kevin Reynolds? There's four or five guys. I don't know. It's kind of fun, you know, to know that the world of skating is a little bit more like the world of tennis and golf, where some of the top guys can go out early and it's not a shock. It's just that it's the competition so tough that if you're not on your game, you can, you know, like Patrick Chen was, seventh in the long or something at Skate Canada, and it can happen. And it just, it's showing that it's getting fair, that if you're sixth in the, like Ashley Wagner can move up like she did at Skate Canada, you can move up to the podium even if you bail on your short. In my generation, you couldn't, but now they can, and so I applaud that.
Well, Kevin Reynolds, you speaking of him, of course, he's in a battle for that second Olympic spot for Canada, assuming, of course, that Patrick Chan gets the other spot. I think it's absolutely important for him to put out a solid showing here, because he started off with that 11th place at Finlandia Trophy and it was not anywhere near where you would think he would want to be going into the Olympic season.
Kevin has a love-hate relationship with skating, it seems. You know, he looks like he's getting some momentum and then there's skate problems, or he's choosing music that and styles that are you sure that's you? I don't know. It seems like Kevin is constantly searching. Even during the program sometimes, just constantly searching. And talk about a talented kid, and he's been around for a long time. He was Canada's superstar in the team event in Sochi. And mm-hmm. he really stepped up and helped put Canada on that spot on the podium. So I wish him all the best, and I think that third spot, well, who did we give? We're just handing out spots. Look, Javi's going to do it. Bo Yang's going to do it. Oh, yeah. And we here and on this particular talk have decided to leave third spot open for whoever wants it. So kind.
It's all for the taking, that third spot. So, well, we will see what is in store for us at Cup of China this week. As always, great to talk to you, Kurt, and thanks for being on Ice Talk.
Yeah, I always, when I see you at the rink, I always try and make sure that the spot beside you is taken up by me, because you're a lot of fun to chat about. Well, we'll see you at the rink.
I'm Alexa Kinnearum.
And Chris Kinnearum.
And you're listening to Ice Talk.
It's been a long time coming. We have been trying to get Alexa Semeca Kinnearum and Chris Kinnearum on Ice Talk for a while now, and we finally managed to find the right time. They are, of course, the 2015 U.S. champions, and right now, very busy preparing for next week's NHK Trophy. Very glad to have them on this week, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
The last time I saw the two of you was in Helsinki at Worlds. And the last time skating fans saw you both compete was at US Classic back in mid-September. So how did the two of you spend your summer in preparation for the season?
Our off-season and summer was a little not ideal, in the sense we had some family matters that we had to take part in the beginning of the off-season and the beginning of the summer. So that was a hard time for us. So we spent some time visiting family and just taking care of things. And then in late July, we started getting our programs choreographed. And the process was a little challenging at times, you know, choosing music and then starting choreography and making choreography work and then changing music and getting new choreography and playing that vicious cycle that I have come to notice a lot of skaters are dealing with on the Olympic season. So it's nice to know that we're not alone in that sense and that everybody's kind of doing the same thing. And then we have been working really hard, but to say that the training into the Grand Prix has been ideal and easy and perfect would be a lie. However, as athletes, you figure out a way to make things work. And Chris and I always do that. So we're really excited to leave in a week. You know, we do feel prepared, even though I guess preparation, you see it a certain way in your mind. And a lot of times it doesn't happen like that. So regardless of the kind of bumps in the road along the way, we're excited to get this year started. Classic was kind of early in the year, so I don't really consider that the start of the season, just kind of more of like getting our feet wet and seeing what works and doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like perseverance has become a theme for your careers. And, you know, we'll talk about last season in a bit, but, you know, the season even before that, you had debuted the quad twist, and you were and still are, I believe, the only Americans to have ever done that element in competition. And for skating fans, a lot of times all they see is that end result, right? Like, the, you know, they watch the program, they're like, oh my God, quad twist. But then they never think about the like hard work that actually gets to that. So tell me about the process of getting to an element that is as difficult as that, and what it took to properly learn it.
I think that a quad twist is, in our partnership, more stressful for me because I just have a little bit of fear behind it. Whereas, you know, Chris is pretty confident in his twisting technique. That's why ours is pretty large, because he knows what he's doing and he knows how to explode. So for him, his only focus at the end is just to make sure I'm safe on the catch. So I think for us, the mental side is harder for me than the physical. And then a quad twist for the guy and the girl does take a lot of energy. I have to kind of snap at the top of the twist as strong and as hard as I can, so I rotate as fast as I can. And that does take a lot of energy out of me. And then Chris, he cannot first at all slack in the power behind it, or else I'm not going to have enough air time to finish rotation. So he has to put a lot of power behind it. And in training days, you know, you don't always feel 100%. Your body hurts, you're tired, whatever it is. You don't have any adrenaline. And, you know, training those quad twists year-round, it can be really demanding on the body. I don't know, maybe another team's doing a quad twist, maybe it's harder for the guy mentally because maybe the girl's just more brave. I don't know. But it is a very strenuous element, and I like applaud anybody who's trying it. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I don't know if lack of bravery is something that anybody can attribute to you, Alexa. but what is the status of the quad twist at this point?
I mean, right now we haven't done one for a little while because of all the circumstances that have happened, and we've had a few roadblocks this season with training and our, you know, physical health, I think more me than her. But we're still planning on doing it. It's not going to be in for the Grand Prix. It'll probably come about at Nationals and then for whatever competitions come after that.
Yeah, the last one we did was at the World Championships in 2016.
16, yeah.
That's the last one we've done.
I mean, we know that we don't need to train the element for months and months and months. I think once we feel very confident with our triple twist, with the timing being perfect and the explosion being perfect, and knowing that we have that airtime, we just will start doing twists again. We do plan on doing it in the next month or so, just to start getting the muscle memory back, because it is a big energy drain when we start training it at home in long program run-throughs. Compared to a triple, you know, triple's not a big deal. We just go into it and get it done and move on. But when you start doing quad twists, it's a really big energy drain, especially at home. So we're going to implement it through, you know, November and into December and then January.
I know that we kind of discussed a few months ago wanting to start doing one a week, maybe at the end of October. But I think we're a little bit behind on that timeline. But I have confidence because we learned the quad twist like 3 weeks before we first debuted it at Nationals the first time, and it was successful. So I'm just going to kind of rely on that as confidence that, you know, when it's time to bring it back, it's not going to take us very, very long. So I'm okay with it.
One more technical element question for you. I remember you used to have a throw loop in your free skate, and you switched it out for the Saukow two seasons ago. Was that ever meant to be a placeholder for the quad Saukow, or was I just thinking things?
We did not put it in with the thoughts behind a throw quad, but it's definitely something we've talked about because I think it'd be cool to say that I've tried one or I landed one or stood up on one, but it just never seems like it's the right time or the appropriate time to start trying it. I mean, obviously last year being sick, coming back, I could barely do anything. So there's not going to be a chance of doing a throw quad. I'd probably like break myself in half. And then, like I said, this off season and kind of training for this year, one, we never really got into a smooth groove of training to make a throw quad happen. And then secondly, is for us, is it smart to try a throw quad on the Olympic season when we have maybe another element or two that we need to really focus on? And I know it's no secret that sometimes the jumping passes aren't super strong. So why risk a fall on a throw quad with the pressure and then try a quad twist and then try our triple toes and have like all these variables that could end up disastrous? So for us, our plate is full, but we are kind of would love to train one day, but I also want to have children. So
I think that's also what Volosozar and Trenkov were talking about as well. Yep. When people were asking them about quads and you know, more difficult elements.
Well, the funny story about Tatiana and Max talking about his wife, you know, having kids someday, and that's why they're not going to do the throw quad, is because we were at a press conference in Nebelhorn with Vanessa and Morgan and Tatiana and Max, and it was the three teams doing the press conference, and somebody had asked about throw quads because the three of us up there, none of us were doing it. And I remember as soon as the reporter asked, like, is anybody, you know, willing to do throw quad in the future? Vanessa, like, bursted out laughing. And she was like, no way, absolutely not. And she, like, covers her face. And she's like, her and her partner are just, like, shaking their heads no, like, it's never going to happen. Like, what a ridiculous thought. And I'm just sitting there, like, in my mind, yeah, you know, maybe someday, but not today. And then, you know, a few months later, they start training their throw quad, and now it's pretty successful. And I just remember that day because she was so adamant about, like, no, never, not for us, you know. And then she takes the leap of faith, and it looks, you know, like it's working out for them. So, yeah. Funny story.
Yeah, I mean, it took a couple of seasons for them, but it's finally looking like it's going somewhere, which is really fun to watch.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, definitely health first and, you know, risk and reward are very different things. But shifting to last season, your story was very much an inspirational one that skating fans know well. Alexa, you had a very serious illness that required multiple surgeries last summer. And this time last year, if I remember correctly, you were just starting to get back on the ice, and I believe you had another surgery that you're about to have at the start of November as well. So tell me about what last season was like for you and how your outlook on skating and on life changed.
Today is October 31st, and it's Halloween. And last year, I was so excited for the trick-or-treaters to come, and I actually ended up in the hospital this night last year. So it's the 1 year on my third surgery. So it's kind of surreal that I'm in the place that I'm in now, because the place we were in last year at this time, it just never seemed possible in my mind. I have like found that this journey and this kind of crazy chapter in my life is the best one yet. And you often hear people with setbacks or just tragedies in their life sometimes talk about it being a blessing because of what comes after. And I'm one of those people because my outlook on skating, my outlook on life, my appreciation for things has changed for the better. You know, I would have never been able to handle myself the way I did at the Four Continents Championships last year. You know, I know the people who were there, like my competitors and the audience and the judges and stuff, they saw that on practice ice, you know, I was a mess. I did maybe landed one triple sal out of like 20 the whole week. And it was embarrassing for me, but I just kept my head down and like, okay, I'm here for a reason. I'm here for a reason. Like, I can do this. And I ended up landing both of my jumps in the competition, but by the grace of God, literally, I prayed and I trusted in his, you know, journey for me. My faith in God has grown a lot. My body was at its weakest, but my faith in God became its strongest. And I really account to that to being what got me to where I am. I just remember kind of crying after practice and at Four Continents and Delilah just being like, you know, it is what it is. And I'm like, I know. So I go back to my hotel room and she messages me on the Facebook Messenger and says like, it's going to be okay. You know, like we're going to do this, this and this, whatever. And I wrote back this message to her that she screenshotted and I've kept and I read sometimes when I'm struggling. And I said, after everything I've been through, you know, a drain, 3-foot drain being pulled out of my stomach, you know, multiple surgeries, not being able to walk, not being able to brush my teeth, doing, you know, not being able to do anything at all. Am I really going to get upset that I fell on a triple sal in a competition? Like, is that really a big deal when I'm able to skate again, when I'm able to be at a competition like this? Like, I really just took a step back and was able to put things into perspective. And sometimes it gets hard. You know, I'm back to full health and I train every day. And, you know, sometimes I do get down or frustrated, which is completely normal. But I'm able to fall back on those experiences and the mindset that I had and truly move forward. And I'm just so grateful, you know, to be on the ice every day. And I would love to, you know, become an Olympian with Chris this, you know, Olympic cycle. But if it doesn't happen, then, you know, it's not the end of the world. Like I'm here, I'm healthy, I'm alive, I'm happy. And that's the true meaning of life. So, I mean, I'm just in like a more mature, grounded place of mind. And although the struggles last year were totally severe and extreme, I wouldn't trade it for what I have now and the person I've become because of it. So I'm truly grateful for the terrible year I had.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the late season start, you and Wen Jing Sui and Song Han had very similar situations where Sui had multiple surgeries and it took them until February to get back into competition. So did you get to interact with them when you were at Four Continents and Worlds? And what kind of inspiration did the two of you take from each other?
Well, here's the reality of it. They're another breed. They are incredible. I mean, Sui had two severe foot surgeries, and I read in an article that she wasn't walking for a while. But, I mean, that team, they showed up to those competitions better than they ever looked in practices. She was great. You know, I was looking at her more like, how is she doing that? Like, what's wrong with me? it was kind of like that. It wasn't more so that I was inspired by her, but I started to look at myself like, well, you know, she struggled this year too. This is her first event. How come she looks like $1 million and I look like a dollar? But, you know, everybody has their own strengths. And, you know, my body itself went through a lot. My nervous system, you know, it kind of had to relearn my muscle memory and everything on jumping patterns and twitching and everything. I literally started from the bottom. And, you know, I don't know what Sui went through. I know not being able to walk, your muscles can start to atrophy and you become weaker. But how long was she off and, you know, how much of her muscle mass did she lose? Because, you know, I lost around 12, 15 pounds of weight. And I'm really tiny to begin with when I'm at a healthy weight. So, I mean, I was having trouble just standing and walking and standing up to brush my teeth because of how weak I was. So, yeah, I mean, I'm constantly inspired by her. I think she's so cool on the ice. But I don't actually think I was inspired when I saw her after her tough season, because she looked so amazing. I kind of thought, what's wrong with me?
Well, getting back to this season, you have a new short program to Paint It Black with Roheen Ward choreography. What was your inspiration for that music and for the program?
So, funny story. After we skated and did Salt Lake, we went into the same situation that we did when we were at Champs Camp and skated our chaplain program. We were talked to by some judges and U.S. figure skating and kind of pushed into a different direction for this season. So next year, both of our programs will be done before the year starts. but this year, we are going back to our short program from last year. And same music. Choreography is going to be a little different. But we are doing the programs we did last year.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
you're the first to know.
we actually, the whole program element order and transitions are different from last year. The beginning is somewhat similar into the twist, but after that, the program is new. Footwork is pretty much the same. So there we are again, scrambling, trying to make it work, having, you know, people come in to monitor us, and then finding out more things that are wrong with the original program of Come What May that we need to change. And just that constant battle. And I think this Friday that just passed, we finally set everything in place in the program. So we get this full week here just to hammer away at the choreography, because we keep changing things. Mm. In the summer, we first started choreographing a short program to Burlesque by Roheen. And that was a little fun, but I didn't really like what it was kind of pulling out of me. So I kind of asked to change it. So we changed Burlesque. Then we went and spent a few days bringing back Metallica. And that was fun.
Yeah, we actually did a whole new program and almost finished.
Yeah, we were like, yeah, this is great. And then we had somebody come in and monitor it. And they're like, well, maybe you want to do something similar to Metallica, but not the same. So we're like, okay. Then we finally pick Paint It Black, and we're like sold, so excited. I can't sleep at night because it's going to be the best program ever. And, you know, we start training it, and then we go to Champs Camp, and they like it. And we go to Salt Lake, and they're like, maybe not. And I'm like, are you serious? Okay. So then we end up going back to Come What May after a few days of thinking about it. And then we waited 2 weeks to have Cindy come back into town. And then she revamped it, and here we are.
Wow.
So it's our fourth short.
That is a crazy set of events, and it does seem to be the theme of this season, especially for U.S. skaters.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
A lot of skaters are going back to their old programs. I think the one advantage we have is that we only competed twice. So it's not like a program we've used for a whole season that we've competed, you know, 5-6 times. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Because I think we might have not gone back if that was the case. So it's a little different, I guess, for us, because we only competed it twice. But a lot of people are going back to old
programs. Yeah, I saw Caitlin Weaver and Andrew Poje go back to their old free dance. You know, Hanyu has his old music. Mm-hmm. Ashley went back to hers. So many people are. And I think it's a good choice. I think it's smart in some aspects. I know that Ghost and Come What May bring out the best qualities of Chris and I. And obviously you don't want to do anything other than your best on such an important year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that takes away my question for Chris about whether or not you're wearing sleeves in your short program.
Yeah. yeah, I was talked to about the sleeves, but
as I've heard, which is a little bit strange.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we do the program next year, I don't think we're going to be too bothered by any sleeve comments, but I think it was more of a issue because it was the Olympic year this year, not so much that I had sleeves, because many people have not worn sleeves.
Yeah.
So I think next year we are going to stick to the no sleeves. And I don't think it's going to matter so much to anyone because it's not like in a super important year, you know? So I don't mind not wearing sleeves. I think it's different for us. I don't know.
His arms look great.
Looking ahead to NHK Trophy next week, it will be about 2 months since your first competition this season at US Classic. So what are you looking to improve on and show off in Japan besides the return to the old program?
I mean, the biggest thing that we want to do when we go to Japan, and the one thing that I think we can really improve on and kind of separate ourselves from a lot of the teams in the world, is making people feel something when they watch us skate. You know, everyone can do elements and everyone can do great programs, but I think that there's a difference between watching a team just go through the motions and, you know, check the boxes, and watching a team and feel like you're in the program with them. Like when you watch Tessa and Scott skate, you can like feel the energy that they have with each other and the emotions they're trying to portray. And I think that's a big thing that a lot of pairs lack. And I think it's something that Alexa and I, because of our strong connection, can show in our skating. I mean, obviously we want to hit our elements and, you know, skate clean, but I think that if we can just make a few people in the audience feel something while we're skating, we've done a good job. And we've been, you know, approached after Salt Lake, we were approached by a lady who, Alexa can tell a story, because she talked to Alexa.
Yeah, this is kind of what inspired Chris and us to focus on this being the most important asset of our skating. After Salt Lake, we always say a team prayer with Delilah and Chris and I right before we compete. And I led the prayer and I asked for us to let somebody in the audience feel something, let people like feel emotion after watching us. So after we skated and we got our scores and I'm leaving the rink with Chris, this lady pulls me aside and she's crying. And she tells me that, in a nutshell, that the song we skated to in the free program is a song on a CD of her and her husband. And her husband passed away a few months ago. And she never has felt like his presence there, but watching us skate and the love we had for one another and the music playing brought the energy of her husband into the arena. And she was so moved by it. And she thanked us for bringing that out. And, you know, that just really moved me in a way, because I was like, wow, we can do that to people. Like, we can make people feel something, whether it's one person or an arena, then I've done my job here. And this is what it's about. You know, Chris and I, we want to skate for the people, we want to skate for the glory of God. We want to do it just because it's beautiful. And sometimes it's not about being perfect or landing all the elements. It's about using your talent and your gift to share your story. So I think Chris is saying, you know, our hope in Japan is that maybe for both programs, we can make one person and in the Japanese audience feel something.
Amazing. Well, in the meantime, we will make sure to queue up some cat gifts for next week when you're in Japan.
Just make sure all the cat gifts land on their feet.
Well, have a great competition at NHK, and thank you so much for joining me on Ice Talk.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So Cup of China is on soon, so follow all the action on Ice Network. And of course, I will be tweeting my thumbs off this weekend at Rocker Skating. A big thank you to Kurt Browning and Alexa and Chris Knierim for joining me this week on the podcast. We have so much in our recent archives, including Yevgenia Medvedeva, Javier Fernandez, and Adam Rippon. And if you haven't been listening for the past few weeks, you really should download some of those episodes. You can find everything on Apple Podcasts or on icenetwork.com under the fans page. Ice Talk is produced by Kate Sullivan and edited by Mickey Brown. From the Ice Network studios in downtown Manhattan, I'm Jackie Wong. Stay cool, and we'll talk to you again soon.